This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. And coming up, we'll have updates on the weekend elections in Nigeria and Senegal, a deadly attack on Ebola treatment facilities in the DRC, and the first summit between the Arab world and the EU. We'll have these stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Nigerians went to the polls last Saturday to vote on a new president after the Electoral Commission postponed the election by 1 week. Initial results on Tuesday show incumbent leader Muhammadu Buhari, who is seeking re-election, already taking the lead. Timothy Obiezu reports for VOA from Abuja.
It is the second day of vote counting in the capital, Abuja. The official announcement of partial results started Monday, and the process is moving slowly. Initial returns suggest Buhari is headed for victory, a result anticipated by supporters like Nasiru Usman. We will be happy if Buhari wins this election, he says. There is no problem in this country, and Buhari has brought peace. Everything is working in this country, he says. For Nigerians like Taiwo Ogunkwade, who support the main opposition candidate Atiku Abubakar, conceding defeat will not be easy.
If Atiku loses in this election, I feel so bad, and I don't think the majority of people fighting for him to become a president will feel so good about this. It's really not going to be a good news for most of the people.
Jaye Gaskia is a political analyst. He says Buhari's All Progressives Congress could win, but the margin of victory might be slim.
It seems from what is imagined that the APC has a slight edge over the PDP, but the results are not showing any dramatic differences in terms of differences in the number of votes between the two parties. So I think it's going to be a close election.
Gaskia says he worries both top candidates are not fit for the job.
I'm worried because it does seem that one of these two is going to be president and very likely the incumbent. But I don't see it transforming into, you know, a better life for the common and average Nigeria, because the growth model that both candidates have favored are models that are not inclusive.
But as more results emerge, Nigerians are watching and wondering, will the trends continue to favor the incumbent leader, or is there a glimmer of hope for his main challenger? Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
The aid group Doctors Without Borders, known by its acronym MSF, says it has closed an Ebola treatment center in the eastern DRC after an attack last night by unknown people. The country's health minister says one caretaker was killed and another hospitalized after the attack in Katwa district, the current hotspot for the highly contagious disease. MSF said part of the facility has burned down. Four patients who are suspected to have been afflicted by Ebola and six confirmed cases have been transferred to other facilities. The agency says it has pulled out its staff who had been there since December. Most of the cases since the start of the year have been in Katwa, which is close to the border with Uganda. The eastern DRC is an active conflict zone, and outbreaks of violence have forced occasional shutdowns. In the international aid effort that have allowed the outbreak to flare up, the World Health Organization has reported 872 confirmed and suspected cases since the outbreak was first reported. including 548 deaths. You are listening to Africa News Tonight Live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. Here's a recap of our top stories. Vote counting is underway for the presidential elections in Nigeria and also Senegal. Egypt's president has criticized EU criticism of human rights in the Arab world, and there's been a deadly attack on an Ebola treatment center. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has banned unauthorized demonstrations and announced several other measures as protests have increased in the country. Sudanese opposition groups, including the influential trade union association that is leading political protests against the government, are saying they will continue their demonstrations against President Bashir despite a series of political moves and changes to the government. Bashir declared a state of emergency for a period of 1 year during a speech on Friday. He also dissolved the national and provincial governments. The longtime president urged citizens to stop protesting. On Monday, Bashir ordered a ban on demonstrations not permitted by the government. The Sudanese president also set rules for dealing in foreign currencies and any movement of currency or gold outside the country. With fewer than 2 months to go before scheduled presidential elections in Algeria, demonstrators have been taking to the streets to protest a possible fifth term for President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. The nearly 82-year-old president has been largely confined to a wheelchair since a serious stroke in 2013. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo. We move from that report to another report from reporter Anita Powell. The U.S. wants former Mozambican financial minister Manuel Chang to face justice for his role in a $2 billion debt scandal that plunged his nation into financial chaos. The problem is Mozambique also wants him back. On Tuesday, a South African court heard the highly unusual competing extradition requests made for his arrest in Johannesburg last year. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg. Anita, can you hear me?
Yes, hello.
Hi. Do you have on this this unusual case?
So you rightly said it. This is an unusual case. We asked the head of the National Prosecutor, the spokeswoman of the National Prosecuting Authority, have you ever encountered such a case with two competing extradition requests? And she searched her mental inventory and said, nope, can't think of anything. So there's a lot at stake here. Manuel Chang is wanted by both the U.S. and Mozambique. And, of course, critics of the Mozambican government say if he's sent back to Mozambique, he'll get soft treatment and it'll be a bit of a show. So some of his critics are saying he should go to the U.S. And that's what's at stake here.
What can you tell me about Manuel Chang?
Well, he was Mozambique's former finance minister. And during his time as finance minister, which was about 3 years ago, he is accused of participating in a secret debt, a debt that was not disclosed to Parliament, for $2 billion U.S. dollars. That money just basically disappeared. When the Parliament found out about it and they had to declare it, It ruined their bond rating. It plunged the nation into chaos. Inflation spiraled. Pretty much every sector of the economy was badly affected. And so this is what he is wanted for, his involvement in this horrible crisis.
Does anybody know what the debt was incurred for? Did Mozambique receive anything for this exchange?
That's exactly it. So the indictment, which is issued by the Eastern District of New York, says these were fictitious maritime projects. So these were ambitious-sounding, wonderful development projects for fishing enterprises and so on, the coastal nation. They just never were actualized. So the nation did not benefit at all. The indictment says that some $200 million that they know of was just squirreled away, put into bribes, into payoffs, into kickbacks. And that's the money that they can track.
So they, the countries are seeking Chang to find out who offered these loans.
No, we know who offered these loans. These loans were done through several international banking institutions, through Credit Suisse, who's one of the big entities involved. No, they want to know where the money went. They want to find the money, and they want to get the money back. And there's another more cynical line of thought, which is that Mozambique is on the cusp of exploiting a new offshore gas discovery, and investors want to get back into Mozambique and want to draw a line under this whole nasty affair and start over on a fresh page. And so to do that, they need to resolve this issue, and there need to be prosecutions, there need to be consequences. And so some cynics say, you know, Chang is part of a bigger machine that orchestrated this, and that might go all the way up to the current president, Felipe Nyusi. And that's what critics are saying, at least. So I think this is a pretty big deal for Mozambique, and it impacts not just Mozambicans, but international investors and, I guess, the global community, really.
Now, there are a lot of international investors in Mozambique. Does this bode for some of the biggest players? Clearly, Mozambicans themselves are concerned that they don't have enough say in how the resources in their country are being used. Perhaps who are the players who might be affected by this case?
Well, there are a range of international energy players and also financial institutions who are watching and who are very concerned. For example, the IMF is watching very closely, and also industry, energy industry players, big and energy industry players from around the world. But I think it's too soon to tell what the fallout will be and what will happen for investors going forward, because there are a few other indicators that we need to see. For example, Mozambique is having another national election in October, and the ruling Frelimo Party has been made the face of Mozambique's they've been front-facing with investors. They've been in power for decades. And so they need to see how the ruling party fares. They need to see whether there's stability in Mozambique. So there are a lot of factors, and I think it's too early to tell at this stage what the effects could be for investors.
Clearly, Mozambique is very interested in this case. In South Africa, how is it playing out?
It's very interesting politically in South Africa. This takes a little bit of context. But a few years ago, in 2015, the Sudanese president came through South Africa for an AU summit. Just with me here. He came through for an AU summit, and he was wanted on an international arrest warrant for crimes against humanity and so on. And South Africa declined to arrest him, although they are a party to the Rome Statute, and theoretically they should have. And it was a black mark on South Africa's reputation for letting this guy get away with something that many South Africans felt very passionately about. Mm-hmm. Manuel Chang could be seen to be in a similar situation. He is wanted by the United States, and he's wanted by his native Mozambique, and people think he's going to get a soft landing in Mozambique. And the South African government, because this is ultimately up to the justice minister, who's part of the ANC, the ruling ANC party, has to, you know, strike a balance between being fair and also being seen and also avoiding the appearance of being too close to the Frelimo party, which has historic ties to the ANC. And the reason this is extremely important right now is that on May 7th, South Africa goes to the polls for a general election, and the ANC appears to be kind of losing its grip a little bit. So this could play into South African politics in the end, but it's not clear how much.
It looks like it could indeed affect South African politics. And the U.S., so what do you think is going to happen in terms of the U.S.'s order?
Jeez, if I knew the answer to that, I would probably not be in the journalism business. What I think this is, the short answer, though, is I think this is going to be a protracted process. I think this is going to be a complicated process. I think there are going to be a lot of confusing arguments. I think there are going to be a lot of arguments over international law, over interpretations of South African law. And I think we're going to see a lot of what we saw today, which is lawyers making arguments that confuse everybody, including the judge, contradicting themselves, contradicting each other, and so on and so forth, while Manuel Chang sits there in the middle, being pulled from both sides.
Well, that is an incredibly complex situation. Thank you for keeping on top of that, Anita. Thanks for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Anita Powell from Johannesburg. Now, again, we will try to return to a report by Edward Uranium from Cairo on the situation in Algeria involving protests against President Bouteflika.
Large crowds of anti-Bouteflika protesters have taken to the streets of the capital, Algiers, as well as the key coastal cities of Annaba and Oran in recent days. Protests have also been reported in smaller towns and cities. Arab media broadcast video of police firing tear gas in Algiers Sunday to break up demonstrations. No serious casualties were reported. A group of lawyers heard here also chanted the familiar Arab Spring slogan, calling for the ouster of the government while outside the main courthouse in Algiers on Monday. Prime Minister Ahmadou Yahya said in a speech to Parliament Monday that authorities are not opposed to demonstrations so long as they remain peaceful. Yahya says the Algerian constitution guarantees the right of citizens to gather peacefully, and so far protests have remained peaceful. He warns, however, against protest calls from unknown parties and said they could turn violent. Bouteflika, president since 1999, traveled to Switzerland late Sunday for what his office called routine medical checks. Former Prime Minister Abdelmalek al-Salal, who is Bouteflika's campaign manager, said in a nationally televised speech several days ago that most people understand that the situation in the country is delicate. He said support for the incumbent president was even stronger than the last time he ran in 2014. He claims that there have been even more signatures in support of the president's candidacy than there were in 2014, and that this shows a complete acceptance on the national level for his remaining in office. Key bastions of support appear to be eroding, however. Khatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, tells VOA that the behind-the-scenes political movers and shakers appear to be quarreling among themselves, with their dissension erupting into the open. He says that until the latter part of President Bouteflika's current term in office, there was a sort of tacit entente among the country's main power centers, including the intelligence services, the military, the police, and the president's entourage. The situation, he maintains, became more complicated in the second half of last year when measures were taken against some key political figures and generals. Abu Diab says the situation has now become complicated and risks getting out of control because a segment of the country's top power brokers may have allowed the current protests to get out of hand. These same forces, however, were taken aback, according to Abu Diab, after protesters demanded not only an end to Bouteflika's term in office, but also for the fall of the regime. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The United States military says an airstrike in central Somalia has killed 35 al-Shabaab fighters. The Defense Department said it targeted armed militants as they were transitioning between locations in a rural area. Reports say yesterday's strike took place in the Hiran region in central Somalia near the Ethiopian border. It is believed to be in response to an attack by the terror group 2 days earlier. Al-Shabaab was pushed out of Somalia's capital in 2011. However, it still remains active in many areas of the countryside. The final statement from the first EU Arab summit made no general appeal for human rights to be respected, but the issue apparently was discussed in private. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, the summit's host and a target of criticism from human rights groups, said in the final speech that EU countries shouldn't try to lecture Arab countries on the issue, saying they are two different cultures with two sets of priorities. Sisi said that for Europe, that means achieving and maintaining well-being for its people, for the Arab world. He said the priority is keeping countries from collapse, destruction, and ruin. Sisi has led a crackdown on Islamic militants and on dissent, in part due to terror attacks that hurt the tourism industry. The summit was held in the tourist city of Sharm el-Sheikh, which he said could be turned into a ghost city by an attack. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.